Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 16, 2015. Rebel leader Riek Machar meets the presidents of Sudan and Uganda in Khartoum.
It is the government of Khartoum that invited our chairman, Dr. Riek Machar, and we learned that the initiative came from the president of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, that they want to touch base on the implementation of the peace agreement.
And Western Equatoria's deputy governor says government forces are shooting civilians in Lui and Jambo.
The forces that came from Monduruba, and they were said to be the commandos.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The leader of the SPLM in opposition, Riek Machar, is in Khartoum today to meet with President Omar Hassan al-Bashir and other senior Sudanese officials. SPLM in opposition spokesperson James Gadet says Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni is at the meeting.
It is the government of Khartoum that invited our chairman, Dr. Riek Machar, and we learned that the initiative came from the president of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, that they want to touch base on the implementation of the peace agreement because it involves areas of security arrangement.
Violent clashes have persisted in South Sudan in violation of the ceasefire, which is part of the peace agreement signed by both warring parties last month. Gadet says the purpose of the meeting is to talk about how to implement the peace deal. He says leaders will also discuss South Sudan's security arrangements, including what to do about foreign forces in the country.
We have foreign forces in South Sudan from Uganda, which we want to withdraw according to the peace agreement. And President Museveni is key because these are his forces. Also, we have Sudanese rebel groups which are in South Sudan and have been fighting on the side of the government against our forces. So President Bashir also is key in this area. So they will be tackling these security issues which involve the Ugandan troops which have been deployed to South Sudan and have been fighting alongside the government.
Gadet says Machar is expected to return to Ethiopia this evening. An independent researcher in Kampala says the meeting between Mr. Bashir, Machar, and Mr. Museveni was set at the request of the Ugandan president. Analyst Angelo Izama says Mr. Museveni is looking for economic partners for Uganda. He also says there is international pressure on the Ugandan leader to pull out of South Sudan. Izama says one reason Mr. Museveni called the meeting in Khartoum is to try to reconcile with Machar.
So the reason that Museveni is going in there, I think, is essentially to find common ground diplomatically and get things moving before and outside the African Union process.
Museveni has been on record when the fighting in South Sudan started. He said that the government in Juba must defeat the rebels or else the rebels must surrender. That's the Riek Machar's rebels. Why is this change of heart now? He wants to talk outside the African Union settings.
There is a strategic complication for the Ugandan forces. As you know, the United Nations has a yet-to-be-released report that most people think will announce that possible war crimes have been committed by both sides. And that's a problem for Uganda, since Uganda is on one side of the conflict. And that also caused problems in the negotiations taking place in Addis Ababa. So this meeting is in line with President Yoweri Museveni's newly found aversion for international institutions like the War Crimes Court in The Hague from dictating what the past peace is.
Other analysts in the region are saying what Uganda is doing now is what they call in international relations bandwagoning, that is, forming alliance with a strong force. Do you subscribe to that?
No, I think the vulnerability for Uganda really is in stopping the bleeding to the national resources of Uganda. The war is very expensive. Uganda is going into an election. Money is a problem for both the government of Uganda and the government of South Sudan. And there is increasing international pressure. So So the idea of the president going and trying to do a deal with Bashir is essentially to ease off that pressure. And if a peace deal comes out of it, which can be implemented on the ground, I think Museveni is basically laying the ground for the withdrawal of his troops and the relieving of that pressure on the government of Uganda.
And this pressure is coming from where? I mean, international community is huge. Who are pressuring Uganda to, you know, mend fences with Khartoum and Riek Machar and, you know, bring an end to this conflict?
Part of it is the configuration of national politics in South Sudan. Both principals in that war, Salva Kiir and Riek Machar, are actually not favorites within South Sudan. From my own sources, the Ugandans have been looking for an exit plan, which in fact does not include Salva Kiir. He is simply a bad partner. It's a bad marriage. So some of the pressure is really internal to Uganda. Like I said, the Ugandan economy is suffering. Part of the problem is the war in South Sudan. So Uganda has got its own pressure.
Allow me to use your word. Let's talk about this marriage. Now, Bashir, Museveni, and Riek Machar are meeting. And there is one partner in this marriage who is not at the meetings in Khartoum. That is President Salva Kiir. Could there be a valid reason why President Kiir has not been part of this meeting?
Kiir has been taking an increasingly hardline and inflexible tone, despite signing a peace agreement. I think he has become an unstable partner. And with Yoweri Museveni in Khartoum, you're really having the partner that has the decision to make or break. The fact that Museveni is able to go there and represent himself and Salva Kiir means that he's the big dog in that marriage.
That's Angelo Izama, a former Ugandan journalist and independent researcher. He was speaking to me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala, earlier today. Three prominent human rights groups are urging the UN Security Council to impose sanctions on two more military commanders in South Sudan accused of committing abuses against civilians. In a letter sent to the Security Council, the Enough Project, Human Rights Watch, and Amnesty International are also calling for an arms embargo on South Sudan. Media reports say Russia and Angola are blocking a US-sponsored move to sanction SPLA Chief of Staff Paul Malong and Rebel Commander Johnson Oloing. VOA's James Batty spoke with Lensley Hutchison, a South Sudan policy analyst at the Enough Project, about the proposed UN sanctions and why rights groups believe they are necessary.
The impunity will only continue in South Sudan as it has for the last 21-plus months of this conflict, without serious consequences for these high-level officials who are responsible for ceasefire violations and other human rights abuses.
You talk about targeted sanctions. When I say you, I mean Enough Project and the other human rights groups are talking about targeted sanctions. So what type of sanctions would you like to see be imposed on South Sudan officials?
So the targeted sanctions that we're calling for, that South Sudan needs right now, are targeted sanctions against individuals, which would involve travel bans and asset freezes of those individuals. It's not a blanket sanction against the entire country or against South Sudanese people themselves. It would be sanction, including a travel ban and an asset freeze, against those responsible who have been designated by the Security Council.
Do you have anybody in mind? Are you talking about President Salva Kiir, Riek Machar? Because as you know, the United Nations already has some sanctions on some military people in South Sudan.
Yes. So on July 1st, the original six people were sanctioned. The problem with those sanction designations is that those people are ground commanders without a lot of assets outside of South Sudan. Whereas the two individuals today that the Security Council was considering sanctioning, Paul Malong and Johnson Oloing, are both very high-level officials with assets outside of the country that could very easily be seized by several international institutions and governments, including their houses or their bank account. So it would have a huge deterrence effect.
South Sudan leaders have repeatedly said that sanctions are counterproductive to the peace process, and President Kiir said Tuesday that he's fully committed to ending the conflict. So why call for sanctions?
We hope and we fully support that these leaders are completely committed to ending the conflict and to achieving a sustainable peace. But right now, with ceasefire violations as they have been and other reports that the international community is getting, they're not proving that they're actually committed. They can't be empty words. There needs to be consequences. There needs to be a true commitment on the part of the South Sudanese government, the opposition, and all sides to actually end this fighting.
Secretary General Ban Ki-moon on Tuesday extended an invitation to President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to come to the Security Council this month. What do you make of that?
I think it's a positive thing in bringing them together to the table to talk more and to have it be in a neutral environment. And they need to show the people of South Sudan and the world that they are both committed to this.
That was Linsley Hutchison, a South Sudan policy analyst at Enough Project. She was speaking with VOA's James Batty about a U.S.-sponsored move for the U.N. Security Council to impose targeted sanctions on two military leaders in South Sudan accused of committing human rights abuses. Civilians in Jambo and Lui are fleeing into the bush after heavy gunfire today. The shooting reportedly is coming from government forces. As VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington, Deputy Governor Sapana Abuyi says it is unclear why government forces are shooting at civilians.
Deputy Governor Abuyi says the shooting started yesterday evening. He says he is not certain how many civilians have been displaced. Abuyi says the army regional sent forces to Lanya County to curb the fighting that began on Friday, which has left nearly 20 people dead.
The forces that came from Monduruba, and they were said to be the commando's unity of the army. He was sent there to quell the situation in Monduruba, and we don't know why he chose to come to Jambo. And if they are going to Juba, why did they start shooting at the people in the town in Jambo?
Western Equatorial State has experienced an uptick in violence for the last 3 months, mainly in Yambio, Maridi, and Mundri towns. But this latest wave of shooting is in an area that had been calm. Abuyi says two army trucks were seen in the town with soldiers shooting at civilians. He says the army forces were in two trucks from Jambo and heading towards Mundri. Abuyi says the forces were looting and burning houses of civilians.
We heard of one policeman who was shot, probably by a stray bullet. He was rushed to the hospital and operated. But apart from that, we have not heard anything more because people have fled the town. They're all in the bushes. And we don't have direct connections with them.
Abuyi says state authorities could not reach civilians from the town because all or most of them are in hiding. VOA also tried to reach civilians but was unsuccessful. Abuyi says he can't understand what is happening.
The army was supposed to chase the rebels if they are there, shooting from town, going out to the bush. But now if the shooting is coming to town, chasing people from their houses and breaking into houses or burning houses of civilians, that kind of a thing. It has never happened like that before.
Abuyi says they are trying to coordinate with authorities in the capital, Juba, to try to calm the situation in all three towns. Last weekend, 7 people were shot dead and 2 others wounded in Western Equatoria's Maridi County. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, government grants help Jonglo students stay in school. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what images come to mind when you think of home?
Serenity.
extreme environment where you see as your last resort, wherever you are in the world, when you go out in the struggle, so in the sun, the everything, that's your final resting place. When you come, you feel at ease.
Sometimes when I imagine home, what comes in mind is that sitting us together, chatting, and we being happy together.
When I think about my home, I feel happy because I miss all those people who are there at home. So when I think of it, I feel raised there and I feel happy all the time. Because there is a saying which says that from east to west, home is the best.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Jonglei State student enrollment is on the rise after falling dramatically during the 20 months of conflict. The national government is providing grants to supplement school fees for most students whose families cannot afford to pay. Before the Minister of Education began sending the grants directly to schools, the Minister of Education sent the funds to State Finance Ministry, which was in turn supposed to send the money to Jonglei schools. The so-called school capitation grants are funds made available to all not-for-profit schools to help supplement administrative costs and improve the learning environment. Tut Kwon Nyang is the Jonglei State Education Minister.
This money will be handled by the headmaster to address some challenges facing the school. There is no laddering. They want to paint. They will do it. Want to buy a chair. Want to repair something. This is the meaning of this money. So this money, cavitation grant, is given to all male and female.
Tut says a primary school student is given 39 South Sudanese pounds, while a secondary school student receives 80 pounds. He did not specify the number of people or students enrolled this year compared to last year. But Tut did say enrollment has increased by 60% this year in Bor, Twitch East and Duke, where the government is in control. Atem Samuel, a teacher who manages the grant program at Malek Secondary School in Bor, says they have received the government grants two times last year.
The amount we received in May was 24,105. Unlike last year, we received 13,541. The capitation grant we received this year, we invested on the same program. It was a follow-up for a plan made last year for a library. And we have seen there is benefit for this one. We have benefited a lot.
Samuel says they have purchased 150 books, 13 tables, and renovated the library last year. Bor Secondary School student Marielle Paul says during the conflict, it was very difficult for teachers to distribute textbooks, but now they have access to all types of textbooks.
When I came here in 2012, exactly I faced the school pit. But 2014, exactly when the donation was starting, I didn't pay any amount of money because I paid 120 pounds for registration fee, but the financial grant said we will not pay that 120 pounds. And that 120 pounds, they will pay them to the school.
Kwan says the State Ministry of Education also supports a separate girls' child education fund to encourage girls to go to school. He says girls' enrollment in school starting from primary grade 5, the enrollment have increased up to 125 students.
We want girls to continue their education. Our people, our community, they don't support much to the girl to go to school. Some of them, they rather contribute much to invest in their son, boys, but they leave behind girl.
Malek Secondary School student Adut Panchol says she uses the money for buying things like books, pens, and transportation.
On April, I received 125. I use it for transport and other things that are impossible for us to get when they are not there. So I actually appreciate the hard work that the Minister of Education do for us.
All of the states except Western, Bahr al-Ghazal, Upper Nile, and Unity State received Ministry of Education grants this past year from the national government. Jacob Achek prepared this report for VOA from Juba. South Sudan government is teaming up with UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, to launch a campaign to vaccinate livestock across the country against diseases, including the highly contagious food and mouth disease. Karen Zaivogo reports.
livestock are a cornerstone of South Sudanese society and culture. According to a report published by Interpress Service News Agency, livestock outnumber people in South Sudan. The report estimates the number of cattle at 11.7 million, goats at 12.4 million, and sheep at 12.1 million. That's more than three times the population of South Sudan, which stands at around 12 million. The campaign aims to vaccinate at least 1 million cattle, goats, and sheep across South Sudan against a number of potentially deadly animal diseases, including bovine East Coast fever, goat's pox, and foot-and-mouth disease. South Sudanese Minister of Agriculture Beda Machar says the vaccination campaign will not only improve the health of livestock, but could also improve the lives of people who keep animals for a living.
We shall be having enough cows in which the mind of our population, the mindset, will change. Where will it change to? We change to commercial purposes. If you have enough cattle, you have to sell some. You will not see a cow dying again or old age. Our population will be told to cull the livestock for market. And if they are gone for market, then the child of that particular cattle keeper will go to the school. The loved ones will go to the hospital. And the remaining one, you just try to look into that. Your house amenities is there.
Machar says the vaccination campaign could also help to wipe out some animal diseases.
If this program is implemented effectively, and I believe it will succeed, some years to come, we shall be talking of a complete eradication of diseases within the country. And if the diseases are eradicated, livestock is the bank of the people of the Republic of South Sudan.
Manut Manual is a cattle keeper in Warup State. He says he has lost many cows in his herd to disease. He says one of the diseases causes the animal's heart to swell. It makes the cow cough and later the head swells, and the cow eventually dies. Manual says another disease that has killed his cows is Zhuang Nial. Cows catch this disease when they graze. Manuel says Zhong Nual can kill in minutes. Yet another killer disease is Manhom, he says. Manuel says the mass vaccination initiative will save the lives of many animals. At a ceremony in Juba yesterday to kick off the vaccination campaign, Deputy FAO Representative Serge Tissot said the project is expected to cost in the region of $1 million. To ensure the success of the campaign, a cold chain system is being set up around South Sudan to keep vaccines at the recommended temperature, Tissot said. So far, a total of 167 cold chain units have been established and more than 1,000 animal health workers have been trained to monitor and administer the preventive vaccines to animals, he said. For VOA News, I'm Karen Zeitvogel in Washington.
Santino Manute and Waki Simon would contribute to that report from Kwajok and Juba. Some residents of the western Bahr el-Ghazal state capital Wau now have clean water being pumped directly into their homes. As Michael Atid reports for VOA from Wau, having running water at home has transformed people's lives, but not always for the better.
43-year-old Sidonia Sabah is collecting water from a pipe in her kitchen in Haijou residential area in Wau. Sabah says the pipe was installed in her kitchen yesterday and has already had a positive impact in her life.
Previously, I used the water that I fetched from a borehole. Now, with this pipe water in my kitchen, I am really happy because I no longer have to carry water from outside. Now I can say my kitchen is complete.
The United Nations says that when people have to fetch water from sources outside their homes, they tend to use only around 6 liters of water per person per day for cooking, drinking, and cleaning. That is far below the 20 to 50 liters per person that the UN says each person needs. 45-year-old Martin Ormano Uku, who lives in High Salam of Wau, says that having water piped into his home not only makes life easier but also saves him hundreds of pounds each month.
We used to get water supplied by carts, and it used to cost us more than 500 South Sudanese pounds every month. But now, I pay only 150 pounds a month.
Households that are hooked up to WOW's pumped water system pay a set monthly fee, currently 150 South Sudanese pounds, to have access to water for 15 hours a day. 36-year-old Malak Hamdan has seven children. The family lives in Jebel Khair neighborhood of WOW, which does not have a pumped water services. Hamdan says she spends 8 South Sudanese pounds each day buying water from carts.
I need a lot of water for my children to drink, to cook with, to do the washing and for bathing. I buy water every day. I also have to buy filters to purify the water because it comes directly from boreholes.
Hamdan says if she had pumped water in her home, she would be able to use the money she saves for other needs like medication. Uluak Mogoiwin is the director of water in WOW. He says 3,750 cubic meters of water, or 3,750,000 liters, are being pumped to more than 1,500 households in town each month. That is around 80 liters of water a day for each family. But Maguiwin says demand for clean water in WOW is rising and the water company is struggling to keep it up.
WOW is expanding. Many people are moving to the town. That is why we are planning to expand our water supply network.
That is not music to the ears of Fadul Abdallah. He says selling water from the back of donkey cart has given him a good source of income and allowed him to provide for his family. The 35-year-old worries that he might be out of job if more people have water pumped into their homes.
The water cart is my only source of income. By selling water from my cart, I earn enough to buy necessary items for my family and to pay my children's school fees. So I will continue doing this.
Mugoiwin says eventually the plan is to pump water around the clock, but was unable to say when that might happen. The system of pipes and pumps in WOW was built in 1951 and is being upgraded with support from the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, in 2011. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in WOW.
That report by Michael Atit from WOW brings us to the end of our show. We now leave you with the song Anissa by Fally Ipupa.
Anis Amour, Monsieur le maire Hugues Gololele, Oyotokolobalelo et le Kaoyotolobakilobi, Président Gino Bokana Papana Anaël, Oncle Didas Pembena Mamalina, Ya Eugène Nguesso, Gontron OBG de Man Rock, Freddy Peugeot, Robert Lobota, Rex Matondo. Zamba Pesa,
longévité, amour,
yep, toi,
Anissa, amour fou,
na baneli ya mumba na misato, poya ngondelo kweluti motuya, na baneli ya mumba na misato, poya ngondelo kweluti motuya, la parole faite chère c'est Jésus, l'amour en personne c'est Anissa, hey, hey, hey. Yo, yo ninele, yo anita, mama Hugues Henri, pe bangolondele, ah, chérie aye,
bonheur, richesse, longévité, amour,
amour,
Anissa,
Anissa.
We have been listening to Fally Ipupa with the song Anissa. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.